Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Janet, who is here to speak with us about Reflective Listening Buddies. Welcome, Janet.
Hi, Jen. Nice to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for being here. I think Sherry was just saying it the other day. It must have been on open air, I guess, maybe when Michael is making announcements or some sort of thing, just noting that, boy, Reflective Listening Buddies is maybe one of our longest running programs, and stemming from just years and years and years ago, way before a lot of the virtual offerings were there, someone saying, hey, how about this as an extra support for those of us who are out there in the big world practicing as best we can. And it's been a long-standing program, and we're just finishing up one quarter, and the registration is open for the next. So we like to, as often as we can, have someone come on and speak about their direct experience of the program. So thanks for being here to do that.
Oh, you're welcome. I love that. And I think I have been doing Reflective Listening Buddies for maybe not right when you started, but very close to when you started. So,
wow.
Like, a lot of years. And
a lot of years. We can almost say decades at this point. Uh-huh.
But this is the thing about it, is that there is the conditioning is always like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I mean, I don't want to take like a half hour or commit to something, you know, but I love that we commit to it with our partner and then show up. And that's the one, I love that. But I also love that every time I have it in my calendar, it's like, oh, Reflective Listening Buddies, I just set myself up so that I am completely available. It's like, my half hour where I'm like exactly here. So no matter what's going on, like whether I've been working before that or I've been doing whatever it is, I'm just really present. And every time, it's like stopping and taking a deep breath and looking around and going, oh, this is where I am. And then allowing to arise whatever there is to arise. And knowing that the person on the other end is there with me. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like no matter what you say, they're there with you.
Yes,
you know what
exactly. I'm right with you, Janet. So maybe say a little bit about the structure of how it works so people who may not be familiar with it are tracking.
Well, you have a partner for the 3 months. So there's there's four quarters. And so you set up with your partner that, you know, 1 week you will call and initiate the call, and you will be the first one to speak, and your partner will reflect you. And then the next week you switch, your partner calls and they speak first and you reflect them. And what reflect means is that you listen to what they're saying and you just say back to them what they said to you in their words.
So when you're reflecting, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just
going to
say. So what you're doing is you're reflecting back the words that the person said, and then you were saying, and to the best of our abilities, we're using the words that they used instead of using the words that we might be inclined to use.
Yes. So you're hearing yourself say what you're saying, and then you're hearing it back from them. And so each partner has 15 minutes to talk. And it really is whatever is coming up for you. So you don't have to, I cannot tell you how many times I come to the call with nothing planned. And as soon as I just stop, it's like life arises, whatever there is to talk about. And, go ahead.
Well, and that's what I was really hearing in where you said, you know, this is my half hour where no matter what's been going on before this, I've been working, I've been doing whatever, I stop. It's like taking a deep breath. I see where I am. I'm here. And in that, whatever arises to be looked at is what I look at.
Yes. And there has not been any time when, and even if there's nothing arising, you can just sit in silence,
yep.
you know, until something. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there will be silence on the call. And what I have found is I have such incredible insights when I'm on the calls because I think it's because there's that space and I know that I have the support. There's somebody else there with me to reflect it back, but I always see something.
Yeah.
It's like I'm always like surprised. And then there will be times when I will see something and it's like my partner is working kind of with the same thing, different
right.
content, but the same process.
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that's the same. So sometimes that will happen, too. And that's really fun.
Right. So maybe you're talking about something. First of all, maybe not have even planned it ahead of time or perfectly fine. I project sometimes people do really have something that they want to use that time for. Like, I've been really, you know, up against this or seeing that. Or maybe I had a huge insight that I'm excited about and I want to talk about more. Whatever it is, that comes to the call. And then, as you say, as it unfolds, you know, it could seem like, that's so simple, right? They're just going to say back to me my own words. But first of all, as Sherry often points out, we almost never listen to ourselves. We don't really hear. So first I get to say it. So maybe I hear it when I say it, but then it's reflected back to me. So I get to really hear it. And in that process, all these things come out of it that I hadn't seen before.
Yes. Yes, beautifully said, Jen. But that is how it works. And what I love is that, as I said, I've been doing it for a lot of years, and it is always exciting. I mean, it's always fresh. It's always new. It's not like, here's a reflective listening. I know what this is going to be. Because you never know what it's going to be because it's life in the moment.
Right. That's right. That's right. And it's really an opportunity to be present for that because one of the brilliant things about it is that it truly is a peer-to-peer kind of practice opportunity in the sense that we're both going to talk about something here. We're both going to get a chance to look at something, and we're both going to be the facilitator, the person who's reflecting the other person. So getting to play both roles in that is really, it's unique. I'm not sure that there's any other practice opportunity that has both of those components in the same place at the same time.
Yes, and that reminds me of another thing. So it's not like, it isn't like a personality thing. Like, hey, how you doing? Where do you live? What's going on? You know, like, really? Mm-hmm. That happened? I mean, so there's no like conversation. Mm-hmm. There's just like, this is what I'm seeing. It's reflected. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, the other person's turn. And then it's like, goodbye. And I just love that. I love that so what do you call it? Is it that the personality is not needed?
Not needed.
We're just reflecting life.
Exactly. We're just reflecting life. So the whole thing is done in the privileged environment. That there's no personality in it. There are no lines that are going to be crossed. We're just two folks in Sangha who are practicing together. And we got on this call and do that. You know, one thing I did want to ask you, Janet, before we run up against the clock is, what if someone's interested in it and they know nothing about reflection? I don't know how to reflect. I've never practiced that. I don't know reflective listening. I don't,
Oh, that is so great. Well, we have, if you go to the reflective listening tab on the Living Compassion site, there, we've got all the information there. We have a recording that you can listen to. There's a call that you come to. If you're brand new, there's a couple calls that you can come to so that you can find out and ask all your questions. And then you will, once you do it, you'll know how to do it. So it's like we help you get started. And then once you get started, it's like, and then there's support for you while you're going through the program.
They're actually support calls where other folks doing the program will be on it, right? And a facilitator facilitates those calls, who can assist with questions and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's training calls and then there's support calls. So you get lots of support, and once you do it once, you know how to do it.
Yeah, and the other thing I love about it is, you know, this is one of the encouragements that always comes up in the training calls is, you know, we're not going for any kind of, you know, you're not going to get graded on this, right? Well, you missed a word back there. You know, it's not about trying to remember every single thing the person who's speaking said and say it back exactly. You know, perfectly fair game to say something like, you know what, I just realized would you say that again? I forgot what you said.
I know.
So
I completely lost that.
Yeah, exactly.
I completely got bamboozled there. I wasn't there. Could you just repeat that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, of course, the person is, of course I'll repeat it because I know what I just said. Or maybe I don't remember what I just said, but it's all okay.
But here's what I'm saying right now. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And,
exactly.
You know, so many folks talk about how then that skill of reflective listening becomes something that's available to them in so many aspects of life, not just on that weekly call.
Yeah, absolutely. You really learn how to listen, and you learn how to be present, and you learn how to show up, just to show up and be there, not to be. I just keep going back to a personality. Like, ooh, I got, you know, if you're thinking, I've got to do this perfect or anything, you won't be able to hear the words that are spoken, which is interesting.
Well, that's a really nice connection there, Janet, that having that training to get to show up weekly and not have to be a personality and then experience how beautiful the call is, how inspiring, how much I see, how much I project, again, that brings us that opportunity to realize, wow, I could be that way with people that I'm very close to, people that I love, people that are, you know, a part of my everyday life. I could practice not having to be a personality in that sort of who I am, what I want kind of a way, and just really have that spirit and skill of reflection be available to me in all of my communications.
Yeah, that is so true, and that is so available. And I have definitely found that to be of use in my life, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure others have, too. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's a great program. So if you have never done it, I would say just go ahead and sign up, and you will get the support you need to get started, and it's amazing.
Great. Well, Janet, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon / this
evening.
Thank you
for inviting me.
And talking with us about it. Yeah, that's great.
Thanks,
Janet. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Janet. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined today by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi there. I always enjoy hearing about Reflective Listening Buddies, and it's, in my experience, it's a great program.
Oh, it's not just a phenomenal program, it's a fantastic skill.
Yes.
You know, it just to always be able to reflect what someone else says is so powerful, because that means you have to be present and listening, and there's no ego involved. You can't be having your attention on a conversation and be able to reflect. It's just not possible.
Right. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I have announcements here, unless you want to start us in another direction.
No, not at all. Let's hear what we've got on the schedule.
Okay. There are still a couple of slots open in the upcoming class on recording and listening, which is one of the most compassionate tools we have in awareness practice. The 6-week conference call retreat will teach 6 key skills of the recording and listening practice. And this class starts this Thursday, June 18th. in turbulent times, ego would like for us to stay stuck in what do I do? Awareness practice offers us another way to live in being. Join us at our virtual workshop next Sunday, June 21st, for an exploration of moving from do to be. The workshop is free of charge, but registration is required. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our longest-lived and most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. And a new quarter starts July 15th. And is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up for the Keeping Commitments Buddy program, which begins July 15th. Participants will be paired with a buddy for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for our call today. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, please press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Ashwini, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, great. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris calling from Boston.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. So I have been looking at participation in the year-long retreat.
Uh-huh.
And I have been working with a duality that I call something like, on the one hand, there's kind of the militant drill instructor, and then on the other side is the pushover parent who's just kind of like, well, you know, you don't have to do that if you don't want to.
Uh-huh. So you have to do it, the sergeant major, and you don't have to do it. And this is around participating in something, Chris?
Yes, that can be any kind of participation. Usually slips into that duality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to see, right?
Yes, because it's so predictable.
Yes, it is predictable, exactly. That it doesn't matter what the content is, the process is to flip you into the duality between have to and it's all right if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm projecting, it just means that you don't participate. We have a conversation about it, but no participation actually happens.
Right. And when if I manage to, if I'm in that process, if I still manage to participate, then the chances are high that it's with the drill instructor, so it's quite unenjoyable.
Right. Yes. So you do participate, but it's because your companion is someone who is hateful and not on your side, and is driving you. So it's not an enjoyable experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So where does that leave you, Chris?
Well, I noticed, I think because we've been looking at it, I caught on to the next step in the process, which is sort of like a philosophical voice who goes, well, what does that mean? What would it mean to not, you know, well, could it mean this? Could it mean that? But it feels like, oh, this is inquiry, but it's actually just trying to find some definition that I can then work with.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find something to put you into the next duality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm projecting that what you're looking at is just simply the components of the suffering process, right? Because the sort of place that we transcend it is, as soon as I recognize the duality, I bring my attention back here, because it's not going to be resolved. A duality is never resolved. And so when I bring my attention back here, life drops in what my next step is, right?
Exactly, yes. And we've been talking about it like kind of like going into the abyss a little bit, but not in a negative way.
Yes. So there's a momentary, the word abyss, meaning that there's no conversation, right? There's mm-hmm. There's nothing that the attention can habitually go to. And so it feels like an abyss, but it's the place that receptivity happens and participation happens.
Exactly.
If you're not in the conversation and you're here, you're calibrating to the information that's available in the moment.
Right. Yes. Because the philosophical voice can do things like, you know, I just noticed it. So, for example, I was looking at running, going for a jog in the morning, and heard, you know, the drill instructor and then the pushover parent. They, of course, came in, and then the philosophical voice of, well, is that really, you know, that, is it really compassionate, or is it really, are you a good Zen student if you want to increase your mileage? Is that good or bad? And I just thought, okay, no, I'm not having that. That this, we're just back in the duality again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, if it drops in to go for a run, you just go for a run.
Right.
And if the conversation takes you for the run, that's well and good, but that doesn't stop you from having life do whatever life is doing, right? Because the important point is that if we have our attention on it, the conversation is going to be there. So the objective of becoming aware of the conversation is just simply because it allows you to make the movement from being in it to seeing it. And that's already a movement into awareness.
Right. And exactly. And so when I learn the language of the conversation, then I have everything I need to become aware of it and then make that choice.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you get to participate.
Exactly. Yes, and I think that's a really helpful place to look at is the hearing the language, and then I have my dictionary, so I know who's talking, and then I can just get out of that conversation.
Right. And, you know, in order for you not to run with the conversation for company or the sergeant major for company, you just turn on a recording that says, this is why I love to run. I'm running because this is how life energy flows through me. And I enjoy the sound of my feet and the rush of energy through my body and my heart rate, my breath. And now you're having fun running.
Exactly. And that is just what I did this morning, and it was so helpful to have the awareness and then put another conversation that is actually real to run with.
Yeah. So not only do you get to participate, you also get to participate with enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Right. Well, just reporting in. So thank you for reflecting that back.
Thanks a lot, Chris. We love to hear it when we have practice successes.
And they're very fun to report. So I will keep.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. And Ashwini, I was seeing in that conversation that to be aware of the conversation in the mind is really helpful, incredibly helpful to see that for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, to see it is incredible, and to see through it is even better.
Right. Yes. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Hey, Rochelle.
Hey, Rochelle.
Hi. Hope everybody is safe and well.
We're trying our best, Rochelle. So far, so good.
Very good, very good. Well, there's more than enough to pray over these days.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And hopefully you and your family are well, too.
We are doing well. My mom's dementia has progressed to the point that my mom and dad really should not be at home without some additional help. And so I am making moves for them to come and live with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big change. My father has some memory problems, but it's more like traditional Alzheimer's, and so he's kind of unaware of the fact that he's asked you the same questions about three times, and he just can't remember asking or getting an answer type of thing. And he's convinced that everything's fine, but mom wasn't taking her medicine like she was supposed to. I've been going back and forth to kind of arrange her medications and to check and see how they're doing, but it's at the point mm-hmm. that, they need to come in and live with me.
And so it's a big change.
Mm-hmm. It's a big change for all of us. My parents are very independent, you know. They worked hard all their lives for their home and don't want to leave their independence or their home. My mother can no longer drive. My father still drives and stuff. Really doesn't want to change anything. And so I know that change is disruptive, but it's just a safety issue. And it's hard for me to manage them an hour away when I'm here working in Charlotte. So, and I have plenty of room. So, what we're going to do is start slow, and they're going to come for 2 weeks and then come for longer and stuff, and just kind of gradually move what they need here to the house type of thing. And I think really the precipitous decline was really related to COVID because their lives surrounded with church. That was their social outlet. That was their schedule throughout the week. And for 2 months of church being shut down, I think it just really limited their social outings, particularly my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's happened with her language skills and her cognition, because she was really functioning pretty good for a while. But over the past 2 months, there's been a precipitous decline. But I knew that this was happening. It's been a few years, but I'd noticed a decline before. And I think my brother and my dad were just kind of in denial, and it's getting more real for everybody type of thing.
So your move is to do what's compassionate for all.
My move is to do what's compassionate for all. They'll be on one end of the house, and I'm on the other end, and so we can socially distance, but I can still be around in the house, because as a healthcare worker, I'm more likely to bring COVID to them. They're very much social distance, but at this particular point, the safest thing is that they really shouldn't be by themselves like that. And so I bring them here, and I'm kind of working on setting up the area and setting up that part of the house so they can live there and I will be here type of thing, and give some more stimulation for my mom type of thing. And when church opens up, then I'll take them, you know, an hour away to home for church so that they still get to go to church type of thing. But I'm trying to be compassionate to all concerned.
Right. Yeah. It's a very hard time, right, Rochelle? And that's really the attitude of mind we want to bring towards it all, where we have to take, we have to face up to challenges that we didn't anticipate.
Well, and I think also staying out of the world of conditioning and anticipatory anxiety that conditioning stirs up. Oh, this is going to be awful. What if I can't do it? You know, what am I doing the right thing? Or is she going to be more disoriented moving at this point? Or, you know, those types of things. So staying away from that conversation and doing what needs to be done next.
Or now, as we say, right?
Or what needs to be done now.
I only have information that I have in this moment, and this feels right to do. And I'm going to do it as compassionately as possible. And the most compassionate thing I can do for myself and everybody involved is not to be involved in a conversation that's trying to get me out of the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. And it hasn't been, it wasn't a hard decision to make. And I actually feel relieved that I can see them every day. And, you know, make sure she's taking her medicines right and be there if there's a problem and be present for whatever they need and kind of easing them into this type of thing. I think it'll be great for my mom. I think my dad is a little bit resistant to it because he likes to be independent. So I worry a little bit more about him not adjusting well and being resistant, and he can sometimes be a little bit antagonistic about some things. And he's an independent person, or he was, and he's just losing capabilities, and he doesn't realize it.
Right, such a great practice opportunity. Right, Rochelle, I project to come from love, to stay in love, to be able to recognize where the other person is coming from and to respond in that way, right? That there is resistance and you understand the resistance, and then you're able to be compassionate towards that and use your facilitation skills, and also to assist yourself when you find yourself, you know, being triggered by that. I project, right? Without practice, we don't have the ability to stay centered in these difficult interactions and to take care of ourselves in those interactions.
Right, right. I mean, this is why we practice. This is what we record and listen about. This is why we do what we do, and I'm so grateful for practice, because without it, oh my gosh, just everything going on in the world would have me so triggered, and what's going on with my parents would have me very triggered. And of course, there is a component of just grief, you know, dementia kind of takes them away before they're gone, type of thing. The change is so rapid and decline can happen, and it's just, you know, it just kind of gets to you because you can't talk about things that you used to talk about or have those conversations and stuff. But, you know, it's grief, but it's also really happy that I'm at a point in a position in life that I can be helpful, and that I practice that I can be present to whatever is going on for mom.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, it's such an expanded awareness place that you're pointing to, right, Rochelle, because you can be with your grief. The relationship with this person you've loved is changing, but you can still be present to who they are and what they need, and the love is still there. And there's that confidence, I project, to be able to work with it all, no matter how challenging or difficult it gets for you or for them.
Yeah, yeah. And there are a couple of things that I'm very grateful for my parents, that I really didn't realize, is that both of them have had happy childhoods and large families and fond memories growing up. And as they have more and more dementia and lay down less memories of the present, they're more back in the past. And for mm-hmm. both of them, that's happy times. And so mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for that. And mm-hmm. my mom was telling me that when my grandmother was older and starting to have dementia, in the middle of the night, she'd be giggling and laughing, and my mom asked her, who are you dealing with? And she was talking about playing with her sisters, and they were just mm-hmm. having a good old time, and she was having dementia and kind of hallucinating, but they were happy things of childhood and stuff. And so I'm very grateful for that, which is also really important why we do the work that we do, the whole processing things, so that, you know, you can save your inner child, but also you can relieve your future adult, and if you have dementia, kind of relieve that reliving a conditioned negative experience that robs you of your present, you know, state of mind, mm-hmm. and you can be in that pleasant area as you go back with that unresolved conditioned sore spot.
Yeah, that if you are going to not be able to remember the present, at least that you're on a path that's happy.
And exactly.
As their caregiver, that makes it that's something that you're grateful for.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for, you know, because when you ask her, I mean, it's you know, she said, oh, the house is full of people. I said, well, what people are here? And she talks about just cousins and everybody's laughing and playing and having a good old time and stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, that's fun. Well, let's have fun. That's a good thing. Yeah. I'm glad she's not distressed because that would just break my heart. I'm very grateful for those happy memories and things like that. And she was just so grateful to see me. And I took the dog with me. And, I mean, she was just delighted to see the dog, too, the grand puppy. And so she was just delighted, you know, to have us all together and stuff. She was a little confused about the mask type of thing. And we gave up trying to put one on her. Everybody else had a mask, but she just kept taking it off and kept fiddling with it. So, you know, it is what it is, and it's more distressing for her to have that on. So that's the big changes that are going on for me and that I'm practicing around. And it's quite a lot on my plate between the business and work and everything else that I'm doing. But, you know, I just I'm very pleased that I'm able to do that. And I've got a lot of support, friends and family and things like that. So it's a very fortunate thing. My parents took good care of us growing up, and I intend to do my best to take very good care of them as they get older.
Yeah, it can sound like such a – I think that's what we've been looking at through this entire conversation, right, Rochelle, that it's difficult, it's challenging, it's not ideal, and yet there is the ability to look at the whole thing from that perspective of gratitude and patience and kindness and love and compassion and delight and laughter. That doesn't go away, however difficult it is. And it takes a tremendous level of working with it in order to have that perspective, for which we're very grateful.
Yeah. I'm so glad I set out on this path, you know, because without it, I'm not sure I would be in a place to have that appreciation and be present to it. And so, again, another reason to be grateful for practice.
Yeah, thank you, practice. Keep us posted, right, will you, Rochelle? Yeah.
I will. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it, everybody.
Thank you, Rochelle. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. And Ashwini, we are going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back, and we have more callers in the queue to talk with.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I wanted to remind folks that there's a great iPhone app for recording and listening. It's called Practice Recorder, and it's on sale in the iPhone's App Store.
Excellent.
Yep, and again, that's called Practice Recorder. And we have more callers here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Joan, or Joni.
Hi, Joni.
Michael, did we lose Joan?
She's, there she is.
There we go.
Here I am, but hold on. Okay, sorry.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Loud and clear. What do you see, Joni?
Hi, Ashwini. You know how you and Sherry talk about the dark room and the light room? It's been a hard period of time for me, and definitely have been in the dark room. And I'm going to look at it from a perspective in terms of I've been hit hard, or was hit hard by the COVID-19, and it has brought up some of my core fears. And so as I heard Sherry say to somebody that sometimes EKC, you know, ego karma conditioning, when you start getting more aware, it begins to put up a much stronger fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of, I mean, I got to tell you, man, this has really been, it's been a big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
how are you practicing with it, Joni? Sounds like you're aware of the identification and aware of the voices attempting to frighten you.
I am, and they've done a good job of frightening me, and I also then I move out of it. I think the challenge, the interesting, when I go into mentor, into my coach. Basically, I mean, I'm looking for answers, which of course is EKC, looking for answers. And what I obtain is a lot of compassion, which is great. What I'm beginning to become aware of, what I'm seeing in this, is that it really is boiling down for me with a very core decision. And that is, which we're also practicing in the year-long retreat, and that is, can I really trust the world? Can I really trust the universe? Can I really trust and have faith?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, letting go of everything, letting go of EKC, of all the fears, whatever, I mean, the answer for me is it's even more than the compassion is critical. And the bigger issue, the bigger picture for me is trust, you know, having faith.
So I let me ask you a couple of questions. When you say there's compassion, what is your experience of that? So you're identified, and I project your recording about it or practicing with it and talking mm-hmm. to the mentor about it. And the mentor offers, and what you're aware of as your process is you seek answers and on a content level, and what you receive from the mentor is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is that compassion like? What is your experience with that compassion?
The compassion is wonderful. I mean, I'm able to revert, I mean, when it's hitting me really hard, you know, then of course I sit in the dark room for a little while, and then eventually I pull myself out, and what pulls me out is compassion, is turning, you know, to the mentor. And that, I think, is the years of practice that we've been doing that's allowing that. And then, you know, the core EKC voices start coming in. You know, it's like, it's like a back and forth, you know, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's a real back and forth. And
Joni, one side comment, if I may. We don't use the word EKC because there's a spiritual reason for that. We always say egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate for a certain reason. So I'm just going to put that out there before we continue this conversation.
Okay.
So the voices come back at you, and does that mean that you are the attention moves away from that wonderful experience of compassion back into identification?
Yes, to varying degrees. To varying degrees. Uh-huh. And there's also times when it's like, I mean, right now, for me, I just signed up for the class on Sunday because I definitely need to stay more into B. You know, the self-hating messages keep saying you got to do, and mm-hmm.
So it sounds like your experience is it's identification. You can practice with it and stay and come back to compassion, then identification to compassion. Is there does there seem to be a problem with doing that? Because I would project that when you're in the compassion, there's no question of not trusting. Every time you turn your attention to compassion, it's there. So you have an experience of trusting life to be there and available to you in compassion no matter what.
I am able to, the mentor is, the compassion is there. And you're right, at those moments, I love being loved, you know. I love the love that compassion brings.
So would you say that the narrative or the story that says your core issue is about whether or not you can trust life and trust the universe is simply another voice that is sowing the seeds of doubt. And to that voice also, you can turn the attention to compassion and whoever that person is, that person has the ability to talk with the right hand, and the mentor is available to be with that person in the left hand, and you don't answer the question of trust because that's only a question that conditioned mind would ask. You just go to your experience of compassion and keep proving to yourself that that you can trust compassion. Every time you look for it, it's there.
Yes, and I've got some self-hating voices going on right now, and that are saying, well, that's great, but it's not going to bring my business back, you know? It's not going to pay my rent. It's not. You know, do you see what I'm saying? It's like, so, now when I'm in it at the moment, you know, you're right, I feel just the compassion, and when I come,
Well, that's a good place to explore, right, Joni? Because what I project is happening is you're in that place where nothing is wrong, and then the voices start up to say, okay, well, you should be worried about the fact that you don't have a business and you're not able to pay rent, and the attention focuses on content and that whole process of fear that comes up, right?
Right.
And so I think the workshop on do versus be is a good one, because there's a confusion between staying in a process of there's nothing wrong and listening to voices that want to move you away from that process. Because there's nothing in intelligence that won't assist you on any level that you need intelligence to assist you with. But it doesn't have to be done with fear. So when I'm here in compassion and I'm open to, well, what does life have to offer me in this moment? Kinds of things drop in. But if we're listening to a conversation, there's no availability for that, right? All you are is in a contracted place of fear, not open to possibility.
Yeah, this is really helpful. I'm gonna listen to this again. This is really helpful. What I'm hearing. Thank you.
And you know, Joni, the whole spiritual, what we're doing in spiritual practice is really to get that our well-being is not conditional. Because what is being projected in that conversation from conditioned mind is, well, if you can't pay your rent and if you don't have your business, then, you know, you're not going to be all right. And so the whole construct of you're okay, you can't trust life because unless all these conditions are met, you're not going to be all right. But our whole practice of turning to compassion is that I'm all right regardless. And if I'm all right unconditionally, then, you know, that the internalization of that is the trust that I seek. Because there's no security in anything that the world can give us, because it can give it to you for some time and then it'll take it, it won't be there. So if your well-being is dependent on what's not dependable and completely unpredictable, then we're going to be unhappy a lot.
Yeah, I am good evidence of that one.
Right, exactly. So that's our experience. We built an entire orientation where our attachment to things in the vain hope that something out there is going to make me feel safe, I'm going to pursue those somethings. We pursue them, we get them, and we're temporarily safe, and then they disappear and we don't feel safe. And so the assumption is that my safety is dependent on something else. But what's being proven to us all the time is that's not true. So I have to, that the reason that it's unpredictable is because it's not what's going to give me that sense of well-being, which is unconditional. That's something that comes from within. That comes from developing that relationship with the mentor and knowing that your well-being, no matter how dark the room is not dependent on things, that sense of well-being is internal. And there are no shortcuts to that. If we don't cultivate that relationship with the mentor, with compassion, with wisdom in every moment, over and over again, we're not going to be able to experience that well-being.
It's interesting because, I am really enjoying hearing this. I mean, I really, and as I said, I'm going to listen to this again after we get off, like 3 or 4 times. It's interesting because what's arising for me, and I've had it before, but it's becoming more clear. I kind of was thrown into a situation where I had to be self-sufficient, you know, and take care of myself from a young age. And I think part of what gets in the way is, and this is looking at it from the outside, so I'm not identified at the moment, but it's definitely there that there's a lot of resentment that I didn't have the kind of support, you know, the parenting, all that good stuff, you know, growing up. And so and it's funny because that's like an old one, but it's interesting how persistent that is
with me. Exactly. Sherry says it in There's Nothing Wrong With You, right? Nobody wants to grow up. We don't want to be, we are sufficiency, right? Life is supremely sufficient. It can absolutely take care of itself. It's the ego that comes and says, oh, you know, I wish someone would take care of me. And that's denying the sufficiency that you are. And so you're absolutely right. Those old stories and that conditioning is simply there to undermine your experience of the absolute adequacy that you are.
Yeah. You know, I'm something else is arising too, which this one's a new one for me. When I go there, listening as you're responding, I realize that I still, you know, I'm still carrying like a traditional notion, like I'm seeing mentor and coach and divine intelligence is like God, you know, but something that's external and separate from me. And so I think what's really helpful here that I'm realizing right now is I just haven't fully absorbed that, you know? It's like as if I'm depending on something external.
Yes. So that's why we practice both movements with the recorder, right? The right hand is the experience of the human being that is feeling separate. And the left hand, which is the mentor, is the experience of the wisdom, love, and compassion that is always there that can assist. And then when you listen to the recording of what the mentor says, the movement you're practicing is identification with that. Because what is that wisdom, love, and compassion other than what's animating you? So we're breaking that identification, first of all, with ego, which is a weak, whiny, loves to maintain a victim position to life, to being that which is life itself, supremely adequate, able to assist the human being that is an experience of perhaps not the fullness of divinity or whatever you might want to call it. So it's the movement from being mentor to mentoring that makes us make that movement that you're talking about, that stops us from having this relationship of being a victim to existence, needing support.
Wow. I sure didn't expect this. You know, I'm seeing something that I hadn't seen before.
The thing that's what we do here, right, Joni? That's why we call in, right? You're struggling with something, and then we have a conversation, a process conversation about it, and we see something we haven't seen. Because when we're caught in it, we can only see that, right? It requires an expanded awareness, and sometimes that requires someone to reflect us in order for us to be able to see what we haven't seen.
You know, I have to tell you, it's like part of what's gotten me through this over and over and over again is also just listening to, you know, just listening to the radio show, to the recordings, to the 9 a.m. call. I mean, just hearing your voice and hearing Sherry's voice immediately puts me in a much better place, you know.
Yes, well, and let's be really clear about what's happening there, right, Journey, because we don't want to repeat the same process that we are looking at.
I know.
Where you go to is in you, in those places. It has nothing to do with it. You listening to Sherry's voice, and it's Sherry that's giving you that sense of well-being, right? There's a way in which you go to your experience of well-being through that listening to that radio show. And that's how we shift the attention to awareness, the awareness of the wisdom, love, and compassion that we are, by not giving it away. Yeah?
I'm going to listen to this like a bunch of times.
The process of separation is happening all the time as a way to keep you from having that experience.
Yeah, I really appreciate this, Ashwini.
Okay, well, keep us posted, okay, Joni?
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Special. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Joni and Ashwini. In the interest of time, I'm going to bring on our next caller here.
Yeah, we certainly didn't keep the five-minute rule, did we?
No, you didn't, and that you had a wonderful conversation, so that's good. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael from Las Vegas.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
I have signed up for the recording and listening program that's about to start, and I've also went and obtained the recorder app, and because I'm 73 and slightly technologically challenged, I like to practice things before I do it, and I'm finding that when I am trying to record when I am on a phone call, I can't do it. Is that a problem, or is that the way it's supposed to work?
Well, I'm afraid that's the way it's supposed to work. Don't quote me here, Michael. There are wiser people who can advise you on the technological bit of it. But as far as my experience goes, it's hard to use your phone to be on a conference call and do a recording on your phone. So it's best to have a separate recorder.
Okay. So I should just go out and get a separate recorder as well.
That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
All right.
That's what I was calling on, and I'm just appreciating the show, and I'll let you get back to someone who has a non-technological question.
Okay. All right. And I hope the class is going to be wonderful, and we look forward to hearing from you when you've done it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Mark calling from Tucson.
Hey, Mark.
Hey. Wow. Okay, so I think I can keep it in 5 minutes. It's just three small things. One, I've got to hear again. Recording, reflective listening is for me by far, I think it's just an amazing, amazing thing. And I just want to add to the pile. It has proved to me to be useful in my business, in my relationships with, you know, like my partners, with my children. I mean, if I can find a moment to just go to the place of reflecting, if I can find that place of peace, everything gets a lot better. And so this is just me plugging for that. It's an amazing program. And thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that testimonial, Mark. It truly is. The ability to thought circuit the immediate ego reaction to anything that is said and to be able to reflect it rather than go to that ego place is so invaluable. You're right. It saves so much suffering.
Yeah, it's the main thing. It really, I mean, you know, there have been almost knockdown, dragouts, you know, not physical fights, but serious fights between myself and other people for whatever reason. And when I can find that place of, oh, wait a minute, I'll just reflect and do it. You have to do it nicely. You can't do it from a superior place. But if you can find that place of compassionate reflection, just like, oh, this person is having a really hard time. And I was too. I am. Oh, my.
Anyway. Yes, it's purely compassionate. All right, so let's stay on track. Three things.
Okay,
down.
Number two, and this has bothered me forever. My African-American wife of 40 years, of course, made this point many years ago, and I'm going to request that people consider using the term perhaps foggy room or obscured room or place of obscuration instead of dark. And my reason actually isn't that. It's because for me, the place of the greatest amount of peace and the greatest amount of, oh, everything is Tathagata, is the place of darkness. It's a request. I'm putting it out there.
Well, and it can certainly be for you, right, Mark?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
In fact,
I
have a little trouble when somebody says I've been in the dark place. I think, oh, that was great. And then the rest of they have to say is like, oh, right.
Well, that's it. That's a moment for good for reflection, right? Because everybody else can have whatever experience they have. My experience of the dark place is a wonderful place, and my experience of the dark room is a foggy place.
Right. Yeah. When it's what other people refer to as the dark room, for me, it is total obscuration. It's not being able to see my hand in front of my face. So that was just a suggestion. And I've forgotten the third item because that one was so full of emotional energy. I know what it is. And finally, I can't believe it. It's been 3 years. It's certainly been 2 years that you've been putting out this system with the year-long retreat of looking at the sub-personalities and their interactions, and then we go to self-hate and so forth. And it's the same process every month. And, of course, that's obvious the first time you get to the second month. But it's taken me this long to actually find myself using it. And I'm using it now, like, just watching myself when these things start to happen and in other people as well. And of course, it helps tremendously to have a kind of a process that helps you to kind of turn over the stones. See what crawls out.
It's a framework, right? It's a framework. It's a vocabulary to dissect suffering.
It's beautiful,
so
and I want to thank you.
We ask people what your process is, that's the question that I'm asking, right? Not what your story is, but have you paid enough attention to be able to articulate back the suffering process in terms of the beliefs and assumptions, in terms of the voices, in terms of the self-hate? Now you're describing suffering as a process that's like a program, and it's not personal anymore, right?
No.
And
no.
It's so much more information when it's not narrated from someone within the story.
Right. And each of those, each one with their own story, adds another kind of facet to the, what is this that's going on here? So I'm so thankful. I haven't got it down yet, but it's cropping up, which means that is starting to work from beneath. It's not an intellectual activity now. It's something else.
And yeah, it's internalized. Right?
It's mm-hmm. it's happening.
Yeah.
It's absolutely happening. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is amazing. It's amazing how you can train awareness, right?
Yeah, really. And I think that comes from a recent, again, the simplest of understandings, which has taken forever, is that thinking isn't, I've known thinking wasn't of any great use. There is thinking that's useful. If I'm in a car and I'm driving from one place to the other, it's really important to think about what I'm doing. But that's really present kind of thinking, so that's not really what I'm talking about. It's that kind of mulling over, the chewing on, all of that stuff. It just is so much simpler to go to that heart place that I refer to as the great darkness, that place that kind of starts in my chest and goes back and up and forever, and just wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That instead of figuring it out and noodling it and using conditioned mind, there's a way to stay in intelligence for intelligence to be intelligent about it, right?
Yeah.
No thinking required. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I do that.
I love the way you said it's the heart place, right,
Mark?
Because we say it, namo prajna paramita hridaya, the homage to the wisdom in the heart.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then based on something somebody said today, was it you? It had to have been you. When that happens with this node, it happens to everything in the universe simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
has to.
Yeah, it does.
Wow.
And that's a very... Yes, I think we should stop there, Mark, because otherwise we're definitely going above our allotted time, and it's let's just twinkle from that place.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You bet. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. And thanks, Ashwini, and thank you, Sangha, and thank you all for another great open air.
Well, thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Go happy.